Welcome back, my dears. I hope, however, the time was spent, there was a quality of feeling nurtured. And just so happy we get to sit together. I'm going to ask you all to, well, before you close your eyes, to allow the body to come into a posture that allows you to feel energetically upright and alert. And again, you may want to sit, you may be on a kneeler or lying down. The posture is not pointing to the posture, more to the energetics, and that this is an ennobling practice. And can we meet the teachings from an energetic stance of being available and to have that, yeah, the alertness, the availability in the body as we take our seats halfway between the energies of the earth and the energies of the heavens. And even taking a moment just almost to connect or plug in the earth energies beneath us. If it's a helpful visual, imagining from our feet, we're standing in rich, beautiful, loamy soil and roots coming down from our feet into the earth. From one side of the body, all that is not serving us energetically drains into the earth to be met and alchemized. And from the left side of the body, just can drink in all this grounding, nurturance from the earth, and this cycle of letting go and drinking in, releasing, taking in. Again, it's a sort of a different type of resting in the flow. Releasing, alchemizing, drinking in. And while that's happening, that earth connection, also to feel the connection to the heavens, the space around us. And for the anchor of our sit, perhaps having anchored a little more in the body, I'm going to ask us to let's play in the realm of watching the mind. So early on, when I was sitting retreats, I used to do opening interviews before you started, and John Travis had said, "Okay, when you take your seat, you take your seat to watch the theater of your mind." And so as we sit together, allowing again the body to feel connected to the earth, to the heavens, to the Sangha. We'll take our seats together to watch this mind of ours, not with a critical eye or in a sense of expectation, but just curiosity. How is it? Much as we did in the arriving sit. A great image of the mind, like the blue sky and the thoughts. Past like clouds, and sometimes the clouds are lovely and puffy and sweet, and sometimes they're very stormy and dark. There are those moments where there aren't so many clouds, and so we're just curious, okay, what are the cloud patterns of our thoughts? Can we allow the attention to play with the nuance of the tone of the thinking mind? If there's a kind of whining or a complaining or a judging quality to the tone, if the cadence is fast, if it sounds like somebody else's voice, who is it? So we're not trying to do anything with these thoughts. We're just being curious. Oh, well, again, it's like this. These thoughts that arise, linger, pass. We're just being curious. Sometimes it's the same repetitive thought. Okay. Again, from our comfy theater seat, we're unmoved. Just as the mountain is unmoved by the wind that blows, the rain that comes. We can take refuge in this awareness and just being curious. What are these thought patterns, these clouds that pass? Can we allow ourselves to stay in that observing position, knowing no, inevitably we'll be drawn in to a thought pattern. Okay. At some point, we'll remember, oh, wait, moment of enlightenment, of waking up. Oh, wait, come back. Can I rest in that seat to just watch the ever-changing flow of thoughts that arise and pass, repeat, arise and pass. So again, sometimes it's the same thought, sometimes they're monotonous, repetitive, seductive, fascinating. Just thoughts. Okay. In this moment, as we sit and watch this thought, with a gentle curiosity of, oh, it's like this right now. Nothing else to do. Just relax into, abide in this gentle curiosity. We get swept up in thoughts, we catch it, we come back into this gentle curiosity. Oh, it's like this. Please remember there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, and we see how it is. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. I hope that's it was what was it was, right? I'm just so delighted as always that we can sit together. And as I mentioned last week, I wanted to do a series, which I've done in a long time, primarily drawing from Ajahn Sutito's book called The Paramis, Crossing Ways to Cross Life's Floods. And it is available as an ebook online. It's free. The hard copies are a little harder to come by, but they are out there. Maria found one. And in this journey together of the exploring the 10 paramis, we touched upon just an introduction to the paramis themselves last week. The first one is generosity. Thank you for putting that in. And the second one, I want to talk about today is Sila, which could be translated as morality, which is not the most fun word. Ethics, my favorite ver translation is just integrity, virtue. How do we live in a way that is in accordance with our own sense of internal goodness, our own sense of integrity, a way of being in the world that is in alignment with the values we hold, and something that we pretty much explore all the time in this class. But in this series of the 10 perfections, it said that, as I mentioned last week, the mythology is such that the Buddha, before he incarnated as Siddhartha, the lifetimes before, he was incarnating to embody each of these perfections. The question being like, how did he do it? How did he reach such a level of freedom and liberation in the thinking of he had a lot of practice in other lifetimes, and no doubt many of us did as well. So this is not to say we have to spend lifetimes perfecting each one, but just allowing the mind to incline towards these qualities of the heart, which I so wholeheartedly believe it is our birthright, that we sort of come in with this awakened heart that's imbued with these qualities and causes and conditions and karmas and whatever else lessons we need to learn. You can get the heart gets bound, guarded, armored up. We forget. So it's a hope as we sort of journey through these 10 perfections that there's actually simply a remembering. Oh, right. This is what it feels like. This is what it feels like to be in the flow of generosity as we explored last week. And today, more, okay, this is what it feels like to be in a place of integrity. So, from this book, The Paramis, he writes, I'll share a little bit of what he says about Sila. It's the more, he's a morality like Donna is based upon a sense of empathy, except with morality, it's not a question of making an offering or a one-off occasion, but making non-abuse a way of life. And right, that's a nice kind of low bar, non-abuse. And this is directed to ourselves and to others in the world. So it can be how do we think, thoughts we think, right? And which is why I wanted us to kind of sit with that and watch what is the tendency of the mind? Where does it go? Is it tend towards being critical of ourselves or another? The voice that, in some permutation or another, can tell us somehow we're not good enough or not worthy or all of the ways that our minds really are kind of engaged with the form of harm, self-harm. So. This is more of a sustained kind of practice. The fundamental principle is I don't do to you what I wouldn't want you to do to me. Right? This is sort of, I think, a teaching that just is across the board in all the major religions and tenets of let's be kind, let's not steal, let's not lie, let's not abuse our sexual energies, and let's not get so intoxicated we can't think. And this is very much the precepts that the Buddha shared. I'll get to those in a moment. Just want to stay with the book a little bit. Sila also involves wisdom. It's the ethical sensitivity asks us to consider more carefully what is harmful. Is the way that I'm thinking causing ease or is it causing harm? If we're kind of beating each selves up all the time internally, and sometimes the guys are like, "I'm making myself better." Yeah, maybe not when there's sort of it can be scary or a meanness. We begin to notice the energies and impulses we have that may be outside the boundaries of how we want to show up. So it's just an invitation to be reflective. What am I doing? How am I thinking? How am I speaking? Is it in accordance to the values that I hold dear? If one doesn't have confidence and faith in one's temple of awareness, one can get very confused and depressed about it all. This is where the idea of establishing good-heartedness and generosity as a foundation pays off, so that the mind's foundation can be built on intentions like these that one has carried into action. So again, the sense that we are laying a foundation, generosity, and really being in the flow of giving and receiving is a foundational quality. There's an opening of the heart when there's a giving and an opening of the heart to actually receive. And what an essential foundational quality this is to then move more into the realm of action, which is where integrity kind of comes in, the seal of the practice, putting it into action. And I spoke last week of the image of the bridge, sort of the teachings in its most broad sense, the bridge crossing one shore to the other. The first pillar of this bridge is generosity, opening of the heart. And the second pillar, which goes down to the depths of the river, is integrity. It's seal, it's action. How are we actually behaving on the cushion? It's one thing watching the mind, but really, perhaps more importantly, or certainly as equally important, how are we engaging with others? It's one thing to be a great person on the cushion. It's good. And then to be a jerk out in the world, not so good. And we want to kind of bridge the two. So as we are when we're practicing, that's actually how we are out in the world. And that's why we call it practice, because we do get caught, right? We're going to get caught in fear. We're going to get caught in anger and frustration. We say things we don't mean, or we behave in ways that we wish we hadn't. That's being human. And then we undertake both noticing, oh, I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have done that. Okay. And then enter into a process of repair through forgiveness. But until we have the awareness to see, oh, oops, I was caught, then it's much harder to live from that place of integrity. If we're just always moving forward without slowing down enough to say, what's the impact of my actions and my words? I love this. This isn't this movement of slowing down to really pay attention to our actions, what we're saying, what we're doing. This withdrawal isn't a denial of what's happening. It's a lessening of the drama. It's less the getting engaged more with gossip or the less wholesome aspects of living. It's kind of letting that go to really come back to what's most important. This approach begins to develop the quality of wise discernment. We can note the short-term passionate impulses and consider the long-term effects of that impulsive action. We can ask ourselves, which is more beneficial, the glee of getting revenge by verbal abuse or gossip, or the sense of being the master of our heart and living with truth? And in the long run, what are the results, the impact on me of revenge? Or what is the long-term effect of letting the heart abide in a place of trust, goodwill, loving kindness, and so on? So the precepts, any of us who've sat retreats, we take the precepts. Some folks have this as a daily reflection on these precepts, and really they're just guidelines of how to live. In a talk Gil Fronsdale refers to them as the gifts, the five gifts, because as we align ourselves with these five precepts, which I'll read Thich Nhat Hanh's version, there's a way of stepping into a commitment to be a safe harbor. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to steal. I'm not going to cheat. I'm not going to say bad things about you. I'm not going to misuse my sexual energy towards you. And I'm not going to take intoxicants so that I'm stupid around you. And it's one way of phrasing them, but all of them point to, can I be a safe place for myself? As sort of a safe I don't like this word, but sort of a safe expression of ourselves, that we are safe within ourselves, such that we can extend that to others. So the heart is from Gil. And we can check this out. And again, the teachings that Ihipasaka, come check it out, try this on, see if it fits. If it doesn't fit, let it go. If it fits, if it feels like it resonates, great, try it on. So the precepts, the five gifts, a reverence for life, aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life. I am committed to cultivating the insight of interbeing and compassion and learning ways to protect the lives of people, animals, plants, and minerals. I am determined not to kill, to not let others kill, and not to support any actions of killing. I will cultivate openness, non-discrimination, non-attachment to views in order to transform violence, fanaticism, and dogmatism in myself and in the world. Quite aspirational, right? So we hold these invitations, these trainings, as aspirations, as noting, okay, well, to what degree can I incline the mind towards these aspirations? True happiness, aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing, oppression. I am committed to practicing generosity in my thinking, in speaking, and acting. I am determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others. That's an interesting phrasing. And I will share my time, energy, and material resources with those who are in need. So that's a profound, really broad expansion in there of how to not take that which has not been offered, how to intent, set the intention not to steal. And I've spoken to people talk about sort of energetically, time. This is not just material objects, but sort of again an energetic of, can I stay with what is mine to not feel entitled to take that which is not mine? True love, aware of the suffering caused by sexual misconduct, I'm committed to cultivating responsibility and learning ways to protect the safety and integrity of others, couples, and families. Wise speech, as he puts, loving speech and deep listening. And I love the component of listening. Again, there's the flow of how do we speak internally, the internal monologue, how do we talk to ourselves? Again, noting the tone with which we talk to ourselves or beat ourselves up. How do we speak out loud? And then how do we listen? How do we receive? How are we received by others? Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and the inability to listen to others, I am committed to cultivating loving speech and compassionate listening in order to relieve suffering and promote reconciliation and peace in myself and among other people. Nourishing and healing, aware of the suffering caused by unmindful consumption, I am committed to cultivating good health, both physical and mental, for myself, my family, and my society by practicing mindful eating, drinking, and consuming. And one of the many things I appreciate, this broader view of the consumption, it's not just of alcohol or drugs, but it's also of media, of news, of what we visually take in, what we are consuming on a diet in its most broad sense. And being able to kind of put up the protective gates of, is watching this, is reading this, is eating this, is ingesting this to my benefit, myself, the benefit of others. And there's not a strict, you may not drink, you may not take drugs. It's just, and someone, there is some version, it's like not taking antioxidants such that it makes you stupid, which I love. Just sort of, we can do this in moderation. It's not a, we're not taking monastic vows. It's just an inclining towards staying safe, being able to stay safe within ourselves. And again, the kind of guardians of what are we actually consuming. Speaking of guardians, there's a said to be the two guardians of the universe, and I've spoken of this before, and I love these teachings. But the two guardians are said to be Hiri, Hiri, and Otapa, Ottoppa, I think. Yeah, and they are said to be the guardians of the universe. And one's on the left. Hiri is feminine in the pronouns and the suttas, and Ottoppa is neutral. They are, I think, a they them in the teachings. And Hiri is thought to be of a conscience or self-respect. I respect myself so deeply, I do not want to cause harm to others. That here he, she flies into our mental world at the moment when we are considering doing something that we know deep down to be wrong. She is our personal sense of ethical integrity, our moral compass, and our intuitive understanding of what is right and wrong, what is appropriate and what isn't. She is not severe, but it's a soft, caring, whispering in our ear, really, do you want to do that? Guiding us through our lives with courage and compassion. And I, as many of you know, I've shared this, I was raised Catholic, and that was more like, you are going to go to hell. Effective, but different than the soft, caring voice of, really? Is this inside our bounds of integrity, or is it outside? And just that soft, gentle, sweet feminine nudge of, pay attention here. You may be crossing over into lands you don't want to go because it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel good. It's outside our integrity. So I respect myself so much. I don't want to harm others. And then otapa, the elemental force of caring for others and respecting their concerns. Otapa appears on the scene when we're tempted to do something that is against the laws of propriety, is outside the social norm, or would be condemned by people that we respect. I respect you so much, I don't want to harm you. Otapa draws its strength, their strength, from the fact that we are social creatures who belong in a community, and our actions are rooted in and accountable to a larger collective order. Our sangha is like a group of stars that help us navigate a moral course. Our sangha is like a group of stars that help us navigate an ethical, a virtuous life. Otapa points steadily at the inherent respect we possess for others as our North Star, and helps us say, I care about the opinion of the group, and I would not have any of my friends be ashamed of my actions or my words or even my thoughts. What I love about these two guardians is it's very relational. It's my sense of myself in relation to you. It's my sense of you in relationship to me. That these teachings are deeply relational. Sometimes it doesn't seem that way. We're going to go sit in silence and not look at each other or talk to each other for 10 days or 2 weeks or 3 months because we're cultivating our relationship within ourselves. The Buddha absolutely stressed Sangha as one of the as the third triple jewel, the third refuge, that we are relational beings. And these teachings, and particularly these qualities of the heart, are guidelines of how we can be in relationship. So this is a poem by Stanley Kunix called The Layers. I have walked through many lives, some of them my own, and I'm not who I was. Though some principle of being abides from which I struggle not to stray. When I look behind, as I am compelled to look before I can gather strength to proceed on my journey, I see the milestones dwindling towards the horizon and the slow fires trailing from the abandoned campsites over which scavenger angels wheel on heavy wings. Oh, I have made myself a tribe out of my true affections, and my tribe is scattered. How shall the heart be reconciled to its feast of losses? In a rising wind, the manic dust of my friends, those who fell along the way, bitterly stings my face, yet I turn, exulting somewhat, with my will intact to go wherever I need to go, and every stone on the road precious to me. In my darkest night, when the moon was covered and I roamed through wreckage, a nimbus clouded voice directed me, live in the layers, not in the litter. Though I lack the art to decipher it, no doubt the next chapter in my book of transformations is already written. I am not done with my changes. Live in the layers. Live in the layers of our integrity. Live in the layers of our values of what we hold most dear, that this is the journey that we are on in this life. And sometimes we're outside, we're caught in the litter, and sometimes we come back to be able to hold on to that which is most dear. Billy Collins, My Life. Sometimes I see it as a straight line drawn with a pencil and a ruler transecting the circle of the world, or as a finger piercing a smoke ring, casual, inquisitive. But then the sun will come out, or the phone will ring, and I will cease to wonder if it is one thing, a large ball of air and memory, or many things, a string of small farming towns, a dark road winding through them. Let us say it's a field. I have been hoeing every day, hoeing and singing, and then going to sleep in one of its furrows, or now that is more than half over, a partially open door, rain dripping from the eaves. Like yours, it could be anything, a nest with one egg, a hallway that leads to a thousand rooms, whatever happens to float into view when I close my eyes, or look out a window for more than a few minutes, so that some days I think it must be everything and nothing at once. But this morning, sitting in a bed, wearing my black sweater and my glasses, the curtains drawn and the windows up, I am a lake. My poem is an empty boat, and my life is the breeze that blows through the whole scene, stirring everything it touches, the surface of the water, the limp sail, even the heavy leafy trees along the shore. I'm going to ask you to hold on to that image of I'm a lake and my poem is an empty boat. I'm going to read one more poem and then we'll do a guided exercise. And this is from Mary Oliver, a poem many of you, I'm sure, know by heart. Wild Geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees 1,000 miles repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairie and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. And ask you to close your eyes. And just to pull the energy back into yourself, there's a lot of words, and feeling yourself sitting on whatever you're sitting upon, the feet in the soil, the upper body connected to the heavenly realms. And to recall that image of my, where is it? My life as a lake. Where is it going there? I'm a lake. The poem is an empty boat, and my life is the breeze that blows through the whole scene. So if we imagine to play with this image, alive, each of our lives like a lake. And this particular lake in this particular moment is still and clear. And if we consider what we hold dear, our sense of integrity, our self-respect, our self-respect of others, the heart qualities that we hold dear, and allowing that to be the boat. And what might that look like? This boat of Sila, of integrity, of goodness, you know, to live the life of the blameless. Aspirational, yes. Practical, yes. It's much easier to sit on the cushion when we're not having to keep track of all the ways in which we've harmed others, or we're not carrying the burden of all the ways in which we've harmed others. When we can allow ourselves to be guided both by the North Star of our intentions, but by this trustworthy boat of that which we value, that which we hold dear, that which will keep us buoyant when the inevitable storms come, the storms of stress, of anger, of irritation, of rage, of sorrow. Can we give ourselves permission to allow this boat, this symbolic representation of our own integrity, as a safe harbor, mixing the metaphor a little, since the boat is actually the refuge, the harbor, rather than the shore. But the waters will become choppy, we know. Can this boat of ours, this vessel of integrity, heart values, wisdom, discernment, be sturdy enough? Can we trust its sturdiness that it will see us to the shore? Because this life of ours that is this lake, we don't live on the shore. We may touch into it, but we come back into these waters that are sometimes still and beautiful and sometimes choppy and beautiful and sometimes just a big stormy mess. But this boat of our integrity, this boat of our heart qualities, our self-respect, the respect of others, this boat that helps support the guardians of Hiri and Otapa, is our refuge. But when the waters are still and when the waters are rough. And just taking a moment in these last few moments here, just to feel the support of this boat and imagining it in any which way that it can feel steady, supportive, safe. Knowing we can always return, always come back here, always take refuge in this particular army of integrity. Thank you so much for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.